Narayana namaskritya narunchevam narutamam devim saraswati vyasam tatojayam udirayat nashta prayeshva badvesu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavata utama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki om namo bhagavate vasudevaya om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna, good morning, devotees. Please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So this morning's Bhagavatam class is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. Canto 1, Chapter 13, Text 58. Dahya mane nibir dehe patyu patni sahotaje pahi sita patim sadvi tam agnim anuvikshati. Dahya mane nibir dehe patyu patni sahotaje pahi sita patim sadvi Tam agnim anuvikshati. Dahya mane nibirdehe patyu patni sahotaje pahi stita patim sadbi tam agnim anuvikshati. Hare Krishna. Okay. So we'll do word for word. Dahya mane, while it is burning, agni vi, by the fire. Dehe, the body. Patyu, of the husband. Patni, the wife. Saha utaje, along with the thatched cottage. Bahi, outside. Stita, situated. Patim, unto the husband. Sadvi, the chaste lady. Tam, that. Agnim, fire. Anuvekshati, looking with great attention, will enter the fire. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. While outside observing her husband, who will burn in the fire of mystic power, along with his thatched cottage, his chaste wife will enter the fire with rapt attention. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Gandhari was an ideal chaste lady, a life companion of her husband, and therefore when he saw her husband burning in the fire of mystic yoga along with his cottage of leaves, she despaired. She left home after losing her 100 sons, and in the forest she saw her most beloved husband was also burning. Now she actually felt alone, and therefore she entered the fire of her husband and followed her husband to death. This entering of a chaste lady into the fire of her dead husband is called the sati rite, and the action is considered to be most perfect for a woman. In the later age, this sati rite became an obnoxious criminal affair because the ceremony was forced upon even an unwilling woman. In this fallen age, it is not possible for any lady to follow the sati rite as chastely as it was done by Gandhari and others in past ages. A chaste wife like Gandhari would feel the separation of her husband to be more burning than actual fire. Such a lady can observe the sati rite voluntarily, and there is no criminal force by anyone. When the rite became a formality only, and force was applied upon a lady to follow the principle, actually it became criminal, and therefore the ceremony was to be stopped by state law. This prophecy of Narada Muni to Maharaj Yudhisthira forbade him to go to his widowed aunt. Hare Krishna. Om Gyanati Vidandasya Yana Gyanashalakaya Chakshu Umlitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadatikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Vita Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupa Sagajatam Sagana Raghunatam Pitam Tansha Jivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatmate Kopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Panamami Hari Kriye Vancha Kapatru Vescha Kripa Sundibhe Evacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Sivachari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschatya Adesha Charini Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurachishaya Namaha Ananda Lila Maya Vigrahaya Himavya Rivacha Vishundaraya Tasmi Mahaprema Raspadaya Chaitanya Chandaya Namo Namaste Shri Chaitanya Chandaya Namo Namaste Shri Chaitanya Chandaya Namo Namaste Shri Chaitanya Chandaya Namo Namaste Hare Krishna. The translation of this text is, while observing her husband, who will burn in the fire of mystic power along with his thatched cottage, his wife will enter the fire with rapt attention. So these are the words of Narada Muni to Maharaj Yudhishthira, who was in anxiety because he had gotten up one day to find out that Dhritarashtra, his uncle, and Dhritarashtra's wife Gandhari and Vidura were all gone. Now, so in trying to figure out what was going on and in his anxiety, Narada Muni, who is always very, very helpful in all situations, even with demons, came to the palace. He appeared. He was well received, as you'd expect. And then he started dealing with the situation about Maharaj Yudhishthira's feelings. Now, the major problem was, as we've talked about, the fact that Maharaj Yudhishthira's uncle was gone. And he, Maharaj Yudhishthira, thought that he would just take care of his uncle until his uncle passed away. At the palace, giving him all kinds of comforts and consoling as much as possible, Maharaj Dhritarashtra and his wife. But Vidura had already come, and when he came, he pointed out to Maharaj Yudhishthira pointed out to his brother Dhritarashtra what the right thing was to do. And as he understood and his wife understood, then they both left with Vidura. So Narada Muni is basically, since you can see the future, he was describing what was going to happen, that they're going to leave, they're going to the forest, and in about 5 days or so, that Maharaj Dhritarashtra, that's all he will last in the forest. So don't worry too much about him as a king. And he described what was going to happen. So that's why it says, when Maharaj Dhritarashtra burns in the fire from the cottage, so the fire will burn him and the cottage down, and that's how he will leave. And of course, with Vidura being there, Vidura would guide him in the last 5 days as to what to do on a spiritual level. And also, when he leaves, and then to this particular text, Gandhari would see it happening. And she herself would also go into the fire to follow her husband to death. So in the Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada said, Gandhari was an ideal chaste lady and a life companion of her husband. Gandhari's attitude, right from the beginning, when Bhishma went to Gandhar to ask for the hand of Gandhari for Dhritarashtra, Gandhari showed things that many ladies would think twice before doing. Putting a cloth over her own eyes so that you cannot see, knowing very well that it's because the man that she was going to marry was blind, and she did not want to have to dictate so much to the Dhritarashtra, who wanted to be an ideal chaste lady and wife to the Dhritarashtra. That move, or that particular decision by Gandhari, was very, very, very significant. So she was going to go into the marriage in that state. So the husband had a world of blindness, the wife was also going to have a world of blindness. Now that's commitment, if you ask me. A big commitment to the marriage. And she was there to the very end. All the 100 sons died. The 100 sons from them died in the war, and now they have been asked to leave, to make their departure, leave Hastinapur, to make their departure from this world more significant at the spiritual level. And Yudhishthira is in anxiety, and Narada Muni is explaining the situation. So there's so many things to pick from this. First, commitment, sincerity. Commitment and sincerity. All of that plays into this. A sincere husband and a sincere wife, to themselves, they were. Now, as for the Dhritarashtra and how he felt about the Pandavas, that's a different story. But the two of them, their own marriage, they were very much committed to each other. And so, Srila Prabhupada describes that the 100 sons were gone. And in the forest, when Gandhari saw the husband also burning, then she actually felt very much alone. And so she made that decision herself to enter the fire of her husband that was burning her husband, so that she would also follow to death. So Srila Prabhupada has described that this is called a sati, right? Now, in those days, that action is supposed to be most perfect for a woman, but it is also important to mention that it is the woman that makes that decision to go like that. It's not a law, it's just a right, and rights are performed or not performed. But in this particular one, it is a situation where the wife makes that decision. But then, Srila Prabhupada mentions that it became a point where people just said, okay, when a husband dies and fire is burning, the wife also should enter. Now, clearly that would come from somebody that does not have good value for life, and the person's free will, and the person's free choice. So, it is not a force. And Srila Prabhupada says, in this Kali Yuga, fallen age, it's not possible for any lady to follow the sati right as chastely as it was done by Gandhari and others in past ages. And we have time, by the guidance of Srila Prabhupada, my Guru Maharaj, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, we'll talk about some other instances too involving the sati right. So, a chaste wife like Gandhari will feel separation of the husband to be more burning than actual fire. And there were quite a few chaste ladies before Gandhari and after Gandhari who also observed the sati rite. Very, very important, but their reasons were very valid reasons And they were very much connected with their spouses who had died. And so they made that decision freely and also for very good reason. So now, as the age goes and the age is getting worse and worse and worse and worse in this Kali Yuga, people are trying to force this sati right on others. And that is certainly not the right thing to do. So Gandhari was so committed to Dhritarashtra so much he covered her eyes to be in the same world of blindness as her husband. Now in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 2, Text 2, there is a section of the purport where Srila Prabhupada defines what sati means. Sati actually means the most chaste. The most chaste. The word itself. So, this, and we'll talk about the name, the Sati was also a name of Lord Shiva's wife. So, Sati means the most chaste, and whenever there is a consideration of chastity, Sati, the wife of Lord Shiva, and he's also the daughter of Daksha, is considered first. Now, that's to give a very, very honorable position to Sati. And of course, her name was now being used as the Sati right. But how did the origin of Sati come about? How did Sati come about? Well, the name of the ritual comes from the wife of Lord Shiva, as we've told you, who produced internal flames in a yogic trance. Why? Well, out of disgust for her father, Daksha. Daksha had insulted Sati's husband, Shiva, Lord Shiva, and she could no longer bear to have a body produced by that offender, Daksha. Albeit that the Daksha was the father. So this is how this came about. The story itself is in the Srimad Bhagavatam that there was a ritual done by Daksha. There was a second ritual done by Daksha. The first one that was done, many demigods were in attendance. Lord Shiva was in attendance. Daksha came. And when he came, he looked quite effulgent. He was dressed up and looking quite pompous. And many of the demigods got up to greet him. But Lord Shiva did not get up. And Daksha took that to mean that Lord Shiva had offended him, Daksha, because Lord Shiva was a son-in-law, having married Daksha's daughter. Therefore, it was a son-in-law. Therefore, when the father-in-law has come, and you don't show respect when everybody else is showing respect, then that is not right. But Lord Shiva's position is higher, spiritually, is higher than Daksha's position. So he had a right to sit down. Lord Shiva is not another demigod like the rest of the demigods, including Daksha himself. And that's why he did not get up. And then Daksha, in American terms, he went off, took all kinds of insulting words on Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva's followers were there. They heard it. They were upset. Lord Shiva himself didn't say anything. In the middle of all those insults that were raining down on him by Daksha, Lord Shiva got up and left. Now, then there was another function. This time, we could say hosted by Daksha. So, the Daksha's daughters, the other project, because he's a Prajapati, he's a progenitor. So he had children, a lot of them. They were in attendance. Now, Sati also wanted to go. And Lord Shiva was telling his wife, Sati, that it may not be a good idea for you to go because you know your father really doesn't think well of me. But Sati was looking at the fact that my sisters, my family members are all going to be there. Why should I miss it? So she went and as Lord Shiva predicted, the father of Sati, Daksha, disrespected her also. This time, her daughter, I mean, the daughter in front of other relatives or other children of Daksha. Daksha did not care much. Show disrespect to Sati. Now, Daksha earlier had offended Lord Shiva, and now he's also showing disrespect to Sati, his daughter. So then Sati thought it was just too much. And so she also shot back at him and said, I'm so offended by what you've done, especially to my husband earlier. And so this flesh that I have was from you. This body is from you. And I certainly don't want to be inside this body but you if you show that much disrespect. And that's why from the yoga, this mystic ability by Sati, she set herself on fire. And Daksha didn't do anything to stop her. He just let it happen. And of course, following that, the news got to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva got upset, and Lord Shiva just came to the arena where the sacrifice, the whole function was going on, and they basically attacked the arena and just ruined everything. They means Lord Shiva and Lord Shiva's followers. And there were fights, and of course, there was more of determination on the part of Lord Shiva's followers because they came to punish Daksha and all the other demigods that said nothing. So anyway, the place was defiled back then, and Daksha himself was killed, and there was a sacrificial goat. They took that goat's head and put it on Daksha and revived him. So now he was walking around with a goat head. Later on, he was asked to apologize to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is easily forgiving. So that's in fact what happened. But, you know, that's a little longer part of it. But the middle part, why Sati burned herself, was the reason we talked about this particular. Herself was the reason why we talked about this particular pastime. So now the Sati rite was performed by those wives who thought it fitting to do that particular rite, enter the fire when their husband died. Similar situation involving another Sati rite was Madri. Madri and Kunti were the two wives of Maharaj Pandu. And when Maharaj Pandu left the body, this is in this chapter is Canto 1, chapter 13, text 3 and 4. Two co-wives of Maharaj Pandu, they named Kunti and Madri. So when Maharaj Pandu died, unfortunate situation from a curse when they were in the forest. So the two wives decided, also in agreement with the sages that were around, that the children, there were five children, the Pandavas, they were young, very, very young children, and they shouldn't be motherless. They were all already fatherless because the father had died. But the Sati rite, they were feeling very strongly, the two wives, that it needed to be performed. So the decision was made that Kunti should live for the maintenance of the five children, and Sati rite was to be done by Madri. So Madri also entered the fire voluntarily. Voluntarily. This agreement was endorsed by the sages who were there. One of them is Satashringa, and many are present on that particular occasion for the rites for Pandu, the cremation. So, this is the death of beloved husband. It was not forced on Madri. Madri did that himself. Herself. This is very important. He did that herself. So, Sati rite is never to be forced on any woman. It's already difficult when the husband is already gone. And to force it on that particular rite, another one would not be helpful at all, to say the least. There are other Sati rites too in history. Sometimes it came up, and for one reason or another, the wife could have done the Sati right, and did not do. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 8, Text 2. There, this is a long lineage, but we just cut it short. The son of Vijay, Bahruka. Bahruka's son was Vrika, and Vrika's son was Bahruka. So there's Bahruka, and then Vrika, and then Bahruka. Now, Bahruka was quite a good king, but he had also had enemies. This happens, you know, many times in different situations. So the enemies of King Bahruka took away all his possessions. And so the king entered the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest with his wife. And that's what happened. So the time came when Bahruka died when he was old. And one of his wives wanted to die with him, following the sati rite. But there were munis, as you know, in the forest. They're there. A lot of them are undergoing different austerities. There's one called Arva Muni. Now, he knew that the wife of Bahruka, who wanted to go to the, in the fire with the husband, was in fact pregnant. And because she was pregnant, then it was agreed upon, why take the baby's life too? So then she was advised not to perform the sati rite. But still, the story is actually quite deep. There were other wives, co-wives of co-wives of Bahruka, who tried to give a poison, the same woman, the poison, knowing that she was pregnant. They were jealous of her. They gave a poison in the food, but guess what happened? Krishna saved her. So the poison didn't act. Instead, as he said in Bhagavatam, the son was born along with the poison. The poison came out and the son came out also. So Krishna's always there to protect his devotee when things are being done so wrongly. So that particular son became Maharaj Sagara. Later on, he became king. Sagara means one who is born with poison. Sagara later on became the emperor. There's a whole long story connected in the Bhagavatam of Sagara's sons. There were 60,000 of them. He was performing a horse sacrifice. Indra stole the horse. And you heard that before, right? In Atrimuni situation, the same thing happened. So there's so much pastime involved in this. But anyway, not to get too far away from this. The co-wife of Bahruka, who would have performed the sati rite, was stopped and advised by the sages not to. So the sati rite is actually done with good thinking, good reasoning behind things. In another situation that there could have been a sati rite, but it didn't happen, was the case of Kripi. Kripi, the wife of Dronacharya. The wife of Dronacharya, who killed Ashwatthama, had also committed a heinous crime, and he was also to be killed, but Draupadi did not want that, because he was explaining, this is right after the Kurukshetra war, she was explaining to the Pandavas, to Arjuna especially, and to Bhima, that the only son left is Ashwatthama, the only son. That Kripi's husband is already dead. And the reason, this is Srila Prabhupada explaining it so nicely, that Draupadi is considering Dronacharya's wife's position, and Dronacharya's wife, Kripi, did not accept the sati rite when the husband died because her son was still alive, Ashwatthama. So according to Vedic culture, Srila Prabhupada said, if a woman has got a son, she is not considered to be a widow. In actual fact, the husband is dead, so for us, we'll say, oh, it's a widow. But when the son is dead, the son can take care of a woman. And since the son can take care of a woman, what the husband would have done if he was alive, then basically we say, all right, so the son is dead. And so Draupadi is saying, Ashwatthama is going to be taking care of Kripi, the only son of the two of them, Kripi and Donacharja, to Waikila. And the reason also that Kripi did not perform the sati rite was because Ashwatthama, the son, was still living. So widow Shilpapa means one who hasn't got husband, or the husband is dead. So if the husband's representative is dead, this time it was Ashwatthama representing Dronacharya. So if the representative is there still, strictly speaking, she is not a widow. So that's how Srila Prabhupada described this. So, but what about us? Let's bring it to ISKCON. So sati in the modern age, is it necessary? The answer is no. The answer is no, because one, Srila Prabhupada has already said in the purport that, you know, these days with challenges from Maya and things being so degraded, it takes a very, very chaste lady to go through that, even though it's not banned. It could be done, but it's not a good idea to do it in this age. Now, if we take it to devotees in this age, it is not necessary to do a sati rite, because spiritually, Srila Prabhupada has allowed women to have their own spiritual bank accounts, just like the men. So, at the time, women were not initiated, the man was initiated, and the woman was, you know, married to the man, and so the man was successful, then the woman follows, and they go to the same place after leaving the body. So then, serving wonderfully, serving very, very devotedly the husband, that was the advantage that the women had to perform for the men. But Srila Prabhupada now has got to the point where he knew that many women would not have situations like it was in the earlier ages, where they depend on the husband. Therefore, out of the mercy of the spiritual master, he gave everybody, man or woman, male-bodied, devotee, female-bodied, devotee, they have their own spiritual bank account. Therefore, the women don't depend on the men for the destination in the next life. So then it's not so necessary to have to do the sati. But it also does in fact bring the point out that marriages are sacred, and the women as well as the men should be very committed to the marriages. As a matter of fact, if I remember, there are some marriage ceremonies done at Giranagari. And I'll just restrict myself to Giranagari because this is where I heard it, and I don't know whether it's done everywhere in this camp. But in the marriages, there was one particular one where it was, the devotees were speaking through the microphone, dressed so nicely, all that, husband and wife. And it was said to them that there would not be separation. They had to vow that there won't be separation. Okay? So normally this is not something that's pushed so much. But then, Kali Yuga being what it is, you know, I won't go any further into the comment, because in ISKCON there have been quite a few divorces. Sometimes the statistics say that it's at the level of non-devotees and their divorce. And in some places, devotees are even more divorced than non-devotees. So there has to be good reason to enter the marriage in the first place, even for devotees. There has to be good reason. There should be more investigation. It should be, you know, you go to marriage on a reason that's not good, then the marriage itself doesn't stand much of a chance. We are not, you know, so highly advanced. And so going into marriage, you have to be very, very careful. Some people go through astrological, you know, checks for the man and the woman to make sure, the young man and the young woman, to make sure that there is some compatibility there. The real compatibility will come from Krishna. And if you want to know who is a great, 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 pure, loving personality to Krishna, none other than Srimati Radharani herself. And so, if you'd allow me, from Chaitanya Charitamrita, I've taken some points that Lord Chaitanya is describing, because he's there in his presence, he was present at the time in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And the statements made from Srimati Radharani, and they are very, 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 very important statements that hopefully will increase our love for Krishna. So in Antalila chapter 20, I'll read from 52 text on. So, first statement, I don't mind my personal distress. I only wish for the happiness of Krishna, for his happiness is the goal of my life. However, if he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. Now I'll say it again, because these are very, very deep statements from Srimati Radharani. I don't mind my personal distress. I only wish for the happiness of Krishna, for his happiness is the goal of my life. And this is what is being stressed for us in so many ways when we hear Srila Prabhupada say, we have to get to the point where we're developing feelings for the divine couple when we do our service. It starts with being there for devotees when they need our help. It's very, very important. That's when that feelings begin to kick in. By serving devotees devotedly. Serving devotees from our hearts. Being there for each devotee. That also means we have to act kindly towards devotees. And when it comes to kindly, it's not just personal things, but it's also the emotions. You cannot get somebody so upset or somebody in distress because of your actions. That will not be allowed in the spiritual. A person like that, you have to think, well, if I go to the spiritual world, or if I'm allowed in the spiritual world, am I going to act like that there? People are in bliss. We cannot bring things that are opposed to bliss to the spiritual world. They won't let you in. So anybody that puts out about another person in distress has to understand that they're cutting themselves off from going back to Godhead in this lifetime. That's for everybody. It's my own purification too in making this statement. Srimati Radharani says, I don't mind my personal distress. So she's all for Krishna. When Krishna is happy, that's the goal of her life. And she feels, if he feels great happiness by whatever he does to me, even if it's, looking on the surface of it distressful, that distress is the best of my happiness. She goes even to the extent of saying, that if Krishna is attracted by the beauty of some other woman, like we all know about Radharani's beauty, right? And she's saying, if Krishna attracted by the beauty of some other woman wants to enjoy with her, but is not happy because he cannot get her for whatever the reason, I, Radharani, will fall at that woman's feet, catch her by the hand, and bring her to Krishna to engage her for his happiness. This is how devoted we are, that Srimati Radharani is to Krishna. So she is very much in love with Krishna, but the main thing is her life and her activities are such that in whatever the situation is, she is going to make sure Krishna is happy. Her whole life is about Krishna's happiness. Now, this clearly is the highest, because she is really the whole mother of, she's a mother of devotion. She's devotion herself personified. But it's also good to hear how she thinks about Krishna and Krishna's happiness. So we can compare and get away, hopefully, from the way in which we serve, that is served only by instruction, but that the heart should also kick in, and this time say, okay, but she wants to her, and look what she would do for Krishna. Even if another woman is there, Krishna wants to engage this other woman, and this woman is not being so responsive, that Radharani will say, but it's for Krishna's happiness. She will make arrangements for that to happen. So Srila Prabhupada says the purport, a devotee who is satisfied with his own sense gratification certainly falls down from the service of Krishna. So, being attracted by material happiness, then later on the person can be one of those who are called Prakriti Sahajas. And they are considered to be non-devotees. Now, Srimati Radharani continues. Now, if a gopi, envious of me, that is me, Srimati Radharani, satisfies Krishna and Krishna desires her, I shall not hesitate to go to her house and become her maidservant. For then my happiness would be awakened. These are very deep statements. And when I read them, I said, no, I have to come speak so that we all know the extent to which Radharani goes and is willing to go to make sure that Krishna is happy. Remember, we're saying this because we say we are serving to satisfy not our senses, but to satisfy Krishna's senses. So with that in mind, well, listen to how Radharani satisfies Krishna's senses and the extent to which she would go. Many people wouldn't even think to do that. But she will do that. He says, Krishna is my life and soul. Krishna is the treasure of my life. Indeed, Krishna is the very life of my life. In other words, he's not there, I'm not there. That's why when Krishna goes away, then Radharani sulks so much, which is another form of Krishna prema called mana. So she says, I always therefore keep him in my heart and try to please him by rendering service. That is my constant meditation. Srimati Radharani is trying to please Krishna, always thinking about Krishna and pleases Krishna by that constant meditation. Anything about Krishna, she will just weigh it and say, well, how can Krishna be happy in this situation? And I'll put myself in that service, do whatever it takes so that Krishna is happy. My own happiness doesn't matter. In another point here, she says, my happiness is in the service of Krishna. And Krishna's happiness is in union with me. The very deep statements. Krishna's happiness is in union with me. So for this reason, I give my body in charity to the lotus feet of Krishna, who accepts me as his loved one and calls me his most beloved. It is then that I consider myself his what? Consort? No. He says his maidservant. Again, another important information for us. We should be servant of a servant of a servant of Krishna. Radharani says, it's then that I consider myself his maidservant, giving the body in charity to the lotus feet of Krishna. And by the way, if I go off a little bit, lotus feet of Krishna, we've heard that so many times. Lotus feet, lotus feet, lotus feet. And sometimes, you know, some of us with this crazy mind, Kali Yuga minds, might think, oh, well, lotus feet means Krishna's feet is like lotus. But we know the feet, what it looks like, and all the drawings, except for by Srila Prabhupada, we see feet that are like similar to ours. But then the word lotus, lotus, lotus. So then Bhakti Chuu Swami explained what lotus meant. And I just saw a video of it. So basically the reason why lotus is used, lotus feet of Krishna, is because of the properties of the lotus flower. The lotus flower is soft. Krishna's feet are soft. The lotus flower pink, Krishna's feet is pink. The lotus flower is very, 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 very effulgent. It smells so nicely. Both of theirs is effulgent. Krishna's feet are effulgent. And the lotus feet, the lotus has a very nice aroma. Krishna's feet also has a very, very nice aroma. In fact, the whole body has a wonderful aroma. So that's why lotus feet is there. Srimati Radharani, he says, service to my lover is the home of happiness and is more sweet than even direct union with them. So, and then she compares herself. The goddess of fortune is evidence of this because the goddess of fortune constantly lives in the heart of Narayan, and she wants to render service to his lotus feet. She therefore considers herself a maid servant and serves him constantly. So for that reason, Srimati Radharani also wants to look at the service to Krishna as Krishna's maid servant. And so this, Lord Chaitanya explains that these statements by Srimati Radharani shows the symptoms of pure love for Krishna. And obviously it's tasted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself because he's in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So much symptoms of love can come out when we meditate on such statements that Srimati Radharani herself is making, even if we don't go as far as she has gone to serve Krishna. But just reading that and internalizing that would make us realize the extent of love that we have to give to the divine couple, beginning from loving and being there to serve devotees, then serve Guru, then serve Krishna. And so these were very, 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 very wonderful statements made by Srimati Radharani. And finally, we know about the Shishakstaka, the 8 shlokas by Lord Chaitanya. One thing that said in Antalila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 20, text 65, if anyone recites or hears these 8 verses, the Shishastika of instruction, by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then that person's ecstatic love and devotion for Krishna would increase day by day. So this is something that's really practical we could do. Reciting. And in some temples, they do that. On until the very end, like that. And then top it up with Hare Krishna mantra. So every morning, even if we're not at the temple and we say the Shishastika, Lord Chaitanya is saying that our love and devotion for Krishna would increase day by day. And so, even as Srila Prabhupada has given us so much mercy that Matajis now don't have to go through the sati ritual and have our own, everybody, male or female bodied person, has their own spiritual account, and they can go back to Godhead. But it goes, the instruction alone, Bhadi Sadhana Bhakti is not enough. There has to be love that comes out. After a while, that love has to be developed. It comes from being careful in dealing with devotees, not to offend them, being there to serve devotees when they need help, even giving surprises as gifts, and prasadam. But more importantly, remember how Srimati Radharani feels about Krishna and the extent to which she will go to put herself to inconvenience to serve Krishna. And she is the key. And she is the mother of devotion, and we say we're devotees. Then, this is all present in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada says, if we're satisfied with our own sense gratification, then we're going to fall down. And Srimati Radharani goes to that extent, even to make other women who want, Krishna wants to enjoy with them, she would arrange for them to be around Krishna so Krishna can have that particular enjoyment for his senses. So she's there 100% herself relating to Krishna, and anyone that Krishna wants to relate to, she will make arrangements for that to happen. So that's real, real, real devotion. So that we see where the bar is, and we'll try to get there by the mercy of Guru. So Shishastika is the key. If we begin to say it, then our love will also increase. Lord Chaitanya, who came to show us how to be a devotee, he says, our love will increase gradually, daily. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So we'll stop here. If the devotees have comments, please unmute yourself and comment as you like, to your heart's satisfaction. Very, very important. And it starts with how we relate to devotees. How we start to relate to devotees. Show loving. Be there whenever you know we can do something and that help is needed. Be the first to volunteer that help as quickly as possible. And in a very, very, very genuine way. And that way Krishna will be pleased. Because we are here in this material world and this is where we are learning. Learning to love Krishna again. Beginning with devotees, guru, then Krishna. But those words from Srimati Radharani, I hope we take to heart that how where her heart is in serving Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. Krishna's mercy, Guru's mercy. The things that a woman should do should be in accordance to the instructions given by Srila Prabhupada and the spiritual masters from Srila Prabhupada. The same is important for the men. We should be, Srila Prabhupada said so many times, the men should be there protecting the women. There should be, that role should be there. So clearly, if a person is being abusive to the wife, then they're doing exactly the opposite of what Srila Prabhupada has instructed. And that's disobeying the spiritual master's orders. And of course, that will wind up being very costly for that particular soul, for that devotee in the male body later on. Hare Krishna. Gonna charge you, Prabhu? Yeah. The last point that you made, that's actually 2 points that we'd like to talk about. First, going to the spiritual world, even though we have so many anathas we haven't worked on. And the excuse that comes with it, that this is the way I am. This is the way I am is a very dangerous statement. Let's just say it like it is. If a devotee accepts that this is the way I am, then they're saying there's no need for me to improve. Well, then if there's no need to improve, then purification does not mean anything then. And you know purification is all over the place in the Shastra. We are conditioned souls who are wound up in the material world disobeying Krishna, being envious of Krishna. But to get back to our constitutional position, the way we live in the spiritual world, by being loving and serving from our hearts, we don't want to do that because there's some anathas, things that are negative, and we've gone to the extent of being accepting that. Well, you know, I've just, this is the way the culture is maybe like that. So I'm gonna change. That's not acceptable at all. It's not acceptable. There always has to be the endeavor to change. First, by making sure that our rounds are done in a focused way. By making sure that we deal with devotees, especially be around, serve and associate with devotees who are fixed up. Doing the things that we find difficult to do, or the anathas that's there, that they have actually overcome those anathas and watch what they do and talk to them. There has to be the aim on our part to be vigilant with our creeper. Because Maya will just mess it up easily. So to just say that no, this is the way I am, and I've heard it's true, some devotees have made that kind of statement, but we should never accept that as that's you know, people just have to adjust to me because I'm like that. If you accept that, anyone who accepts that, they're not gonna be able to grow spiritually. And Lord Chaitanya has said that. You can't be at a particular level and stay there. It's not like that in devotee life. It's not like that. You're either going up or you're going down. So anyone who says, I'm like that and I accept the way I am, along with all my unwanted activities, that person is actually going down. Whether they realize it or not, they're actually going down. So there should be that move to go up and up and up in purity. No matter how gradual it takes, but we're going up and we should be more determined. It's in the nectar of instruction. We have to be determined to move on with this process, because the end result is wonderful. Life in the spiritual world, believe me, when anxiety is all gone, sometimes we talk about it, but if you can imagine, to some extent, living life without anxiety, it is some of the best things that can happen, but it's not happening here. It's going to happen in the spiritual world. We have to try to get there. Don't let anything like, this is the way I am, stop us. That should not be accepted at all by the body. There should be a constant push for improvement of our natures. Hare Krishna. Thank you for bringing those comments up. Hare Krishna. First of all, this is why Srila Prabhupada is so great. The instructions about how to live a perfect devotee life has been given. And he struggled to get all of that given in his books before he physically left this planet. So there's always the opportunity to assess what we're thinking, look at it in terms of where the intention is coming from. Is it from our own ego, or is it in consistency with what is written in the Shastra and what Guru is also teaching to do? So when we do that, and true enough, I have to agree with you, you have your own impression about things. Somebody else may have their own impression about things. That's true. You can't change them so easily. Unless they want to follow what you're saying, they would not. What you do is all that matters. And when you do things consistent with the instructions of Guru and Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the instructions, the examples given in today's life through lectures, and it goes back to how to obey what Srila Prabhupada has given us as instructions. If you're doing that, first of all, you will be in the right position, and you will also, secondly, be an example to others who may not be doing that. So, in a sense, one sense, you don't have to worry too much about what's around you as that you have to, compared to how you yourself act as a devotee. How you yourself act as a devotee. Whenever you relate into other devotees, give of yourself, but give consistent with what the Shastra says to do. If you know there's some weakness means that activities that are not in line with devotional service the way it's explained, then you seek help from those who are fixed up, who can give instructions or they can give suggestions on how to make your life better. As long as you stay that path and stay in that path, then you will be fine. If you don't have to worry too much about this person said this, that person said, because that's going to go on. We're not perfect. From devotee to devotee, it's going to go on. But you be the example from the Shastra, from the instructions by Srila Prabhupada, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Your actions should be consistent with that. And that's all that matters, and Krishna will take care of the rest of it. Hare Krishna. I agree with you, but that's, I don't have to comment much on it because you talked about the process. So it's a process of purification. They all won't come at once. We won't be pure overnight. Pure devotee overnight is not possible for most of us. Not all of us. People who are already pure, they came from the spiritual world. So purity can be achieved, but it's a growth process. And secondly, that's why devotee association is very important. The place that you know that you have weakness, who is the one that's exhibiting it wonderfully? That person should be your friend. You should be around that person because they will influence you to begin to do the right thing. And it's just spoken out that simply by Srila Prabhupada. The devotee association. See, they say devotee association, but which devotee though? You have to choose a devotee that will help you to grow. Not just any devotee. Everybody's growing. There's some things you do well, and I think that's what you call speciality. There's some things you do well that we may not do well, so then you associate with that particular person to help us. That's a very good point that you bring up, because when we consider the other person as master and we respect the other person, then one, our minds as servants is quite, what's the word? It's cemented, or at least in our minds, we believe that. We begin to believe that. Because if we are going to be servant, then there has to be master. And around us, if we're serving everybody nicely, then we are actually living that particular title of servant that's given to us. And so by doing that, being careful, and you already talked about Vaishnava Parayana, disrespect other devotees, those who are pure devotees, they make sure they don't disrespect others. Yes. Vaishnava Parayana will not take us back to Godhead, even if we do 16 rounds in the way, all four regulated principles. Still can't go, because if you go cause Parayana in the spiritual world, then that's not allowed. They will not allow you to go. That's why, Vaishnava Parayana literally stops us. That's why it's called the mad elephant disease. Jai. Jancha kapatrubhischa kripa sundhivya evacha. Patitanam bhavanevi. Vaishnavivyo namo namaha. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Have a nice week. Hare Krishna. Jai.